Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Would you like to be the fountain of football knowledge within your friendship group, either down the pub or in the group chat? Because if so, the Athletic Football Tactics podcast is surely the podcast for you. I'm Ali Maxwell, and every week the Athletic's tactics guru Michael Cox, its data whiz Mark Kerry, and myself take a tactical deep dive into the week's biggest talking points. This week we'll be assessing the ever-changing role of the modern number nine and wondering if it's having a renaissance, and if so, how Erling Haaland, Darwin Nunez and Gabriel Jesus's big summer moves have shaped that conversation. We're also taking a look at Manchester City against Liverpool and asking if this is still the biggest fixture that the Premier League has to offer or not. Make sure to check out our back catalogue too, 3 years worth of episodes featuring more nostalgic lookbacks at iconic teams and seasons from yesteryear, like Carlo Ancelotti's Christmas tree formation at AC Milan or Mesut Ozil's Arsenal legacy. It's good fun, and the experts bring a ton of insight. So join us. Just search for the Athletic Football Tactics podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to follow and subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode.
Welcome to this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee and Paul Byas are with me. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Hello, guys.
How are you doing, both? Are you both well?
Yeah, good.
I'm in Copenhagen. Very nice.
Yeah. And you made me got up quite early for my standards, but I'm not going to complain anymore. So
Could have been worse, though, Paul, because he is an hour ahead of us. So
Yeah, it could have been worse. Yeah, that's
yeah, exactly. My initial suggestion was an hour even earlier than this. So.
Yeah. I mean, I had to play my hand somehow.
Yeah, you got to take the wins where you can get them, mate. You got to take the wins where you can get them. You can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod to sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well. So go and sign up at theathletic.com/ManCityPod. If you do that, then you can read Paul's piece this week on Erling Haaland. It's hard not to keep singing his praises, talking about how quickly he's settling in, talking about how easy he's finding it to score at the moment, talking about his sense of where to be. Paul, you get into all of that and kind of how he's settling in this piece, don't you?
Yeah. It's a bit of... Because, of course, like, Haaland has been... Like, the adaptation to Man City has been so smooth that basically the rest of Europe is just, like, wondering when they could potentially lure him out from Manchester. And just the article, of course, like, there's, of course, like, the bit of info on the release clause and how it works out and pans out. But there is also, like, I guess a nice bit on how why Haaland is happy in Manchester and how it happened, basically. What's he doing here? Why he feels right in the dressing room, which I think is key. And it's something that Pep has been widely like spoken about in the press conference. And it's something that Pep really rates, and it's important for him just to feel that the club is going on the right direction. And yeah, basically just to know like everything on Haaland's first month here in Manchester.
Yeah, Sam, he's, I mean, that thing about being in the right place at the right time, it's I don't think it's been more noticeable than this week, basically. He keeps finding ways for the ball to land at his feet in the box, even after it's taken like double deflections. I don't really understand how it happens.
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of put my finger on that for an article, basically. The Copenhagen manager last week said, just the way he goes there while the ball's traveling is kind of the special thing. It is like a sixth sense, isn't it? It's an interesting debate. And again, it's one I have mentioned in articles, but it's one I want to dig deeper into, because Guardiola said it a few times, I think including in the last week, about how you just can't teach that. You know, he's just got it. But when he said that the first time, Gary Lineker on Match of the Day after the Forest hat-trick, he was like, he directly addressed what Guardiola said. He was like, I think he can teach that. He was like, he goes, I would love to work with young strikers and tell them what to do, because I see strikers making wrong decisions all the time, and I'll tell them what runs to make. And he was like, it's a numbers game. If you make those runs often enough, you will get the goal. So it's interesting. And when I was in Norway earlier in the year, I asked both his coaches, you know, not with in mind months down the line, I was just like, is it natural? And one was like, yeah, but the other one, it was a bit more thoughtful, like gave a lot of reasons why he didn't think it was. And it was all, maybe it was a bit of self-praise because it was about coaching and repetitive movements and actions and stuff. But it is interesting, and I think there has been an improvement in what he does in the area, even like since he joined Dortmund as well. So he is always kind of evolving and improving. But yeah, that ability to be there, just to be there in the right place. The two goals last week against Copenhagen were the example, weren't they?
Like, yeah, I took my partner.
How was he there for them?
Yeah, I took my partner to the Copenhagen game, and it was after the second one where I think the second one, the goalkeeper spilled it to him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Haaland was just there to put it in. And my partner just said to me, how does he know? How does he know that that's where it's going to be? And it is almost percentages, because if you follow in enough times, you get the tap in. But it's not even that. It's the times when a low cross into the box takes two flicks on its way through and then still lands at his feet. I don't understand how it happens.
Yeah, and I think I think this point is like really well raised, because that's what fascinates Pep in terms of he's the guy that tries to tell his players what is going to happen. But on the one area, he cannot tell anyone what's going to happen because he doesn't know. He's on deflections, on like goal instinct. He was not like number nine, as Sam was mentioning now with Gary Lineker, that he might have the expertise and the experience there. And that's what basically fascinates Pep. Pep is a guy that wants to calculate everything, and Haaland calculates something incalculable by himself. And yeah, that's why I guess that we saw the reaction that we saw from Pep after that second goal against Copenhagen. And that's why Pep highlights this ability that he has, because, I mean, my take is that he's really fascinated by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul, just while you mentioned the release clause stuff as well, let's clear that up, because there's been a bit of debate over what Guardiola said this week. What's the situation with it all?
So basically what Guardiola said is that there are no like preferential terms for Real Madrid or for any club in the world. Thing is that Haaland will have a release clause that is going to start from summer 2024. And firstly, it's going to be valued on 200 million euros. Then it's going to be decreasing until the end of his contract. Still didn't have quite sorted out like the amount of decreases of this contract or to what extent it is going to decrease, but it is decreasing. Basically that's like the situation. And Pep Guardiola, yeah, just wanted to point out, because in Spanish press there was like a big rumor going around that Real Madrid had a special clause for them, and that's not the case. There will be a clause, but it's going to be for all the clubs around Europe. And that's the other interesting point, because this clause does not apply to English rivals, to Premier League clubs. So basically, the thought of Haaland playing on another shirt in the Premier League, it's almost impossible right now.
Yeah, I don't see, I wouldn't have seen how that transfer would happen anyway, whether or not Like even if the clause was open to Premier League clubs, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just my naivety, but I don't know. I don't know which Premier League club would be able to afford the package, because I mean, it's not just a case of pay the release clause, you get the player. You've then got everything else on top, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Because of course there are going to be like agent fees. There's going to be an important salary in there. That it's going to be a massive operation, just for anyone that wants to be all in on it, basically. And like speaking to multiple sources, like in the industry that might know how these kind of transfers go, they like really point out that the team that is gonna really want Haaland, it's not gonna be like an easy deal for them in terms of like, yeah, it's not gonna be like a touch and go. It's gonna be like, we're gonna have to talk, we're gonna have to know all the conditions, we're gonna have to speak about them, see how we have to, yeah, how we have to pay all the clauses, or yeah, just manage to know all the bonuses. So yeah, basically, and I think in the same way, I mean, I don't know if that piece is going to be read like for many fans as, yeah, Haaland could potentially leave City, but I think that basically just puts into paper, I think that we've discussed that here on that podcast in the past, but it just puts into paper what City has been doing in the last 5-6 years in the transfer window. I mean, if Haaland or Bernardo Silva or anyone wants to leave, he can leave. Just bring a good offer on the table and we're going to listen to that offer. But at the same time, I think that no one can deny that the business that City did with Haaland, despite release clause and a potential price to sell him, it's been so smart and it's been so good.
Yeah, so kicks in from summer 2024, $200 million. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, Sam? If you're gonna say bring us a good offer for Erling Haaland, $200 million seems quite about fair.
yeah, exactly. And as much as anything, you know, it's not a football manager. I'm sure this used to be the case on Football Manager, but you just put in a release clause for like ridiculous amounts. And to be fair, that's what they do in Spain, isn't it? Especially since. I guess it happened first after Figo. After Real Madrid actually paid 60 million euros for Figo, everyone went, shit, we better bump these numbers up. And then obviously they kind of got complacent with it. And then when PSG paid the numbers for Neymar, they're like, right, this can't happen again. Let's whack them up really high. But, you know, in this kind of negotiation, City could never turn around and say, okay, yeah, you want a release clause? How about £1 billion? That was never going to happen. So, yeah, 200 million, well, 200 million euros. It's a big amount. Even if it decreases a bit, yeah, fine. But yeah, like everything Paul said, it's a number that's set in stone. It's a high number. He's happy in Manchester now anyway. It's not necessarily worth thinking. It's information that's good to know, and it's excellent from Paul that we've finally been able to put a number on it. Everybody knows now. It's out in the open. There is a release clause. There's no one in an R in. It's done. Everybody knows it. But in terms of its relevance, like, are we going to be worrying about this in 6 months' time? No, you know, it's not relevant now at all. So it's perfect. Like it's great that we know about it, but it's not something to worry about, as Paul says brilliantly.
Yeah, and just kind of looking on how Haaland has settled in Manchester, Sam. There's a few little things that kind of indicate how things are going for him. Like in that he's got his favourite restaurant already, and you know he lives with other like near other City players, near the city centre, that sort of thing. All those sorts of ways of kind of integrating yourself into a new city. It seems like everything is bang on at the moment.
Well, yeah, I mean it's kind of this otherworldly figure, isn't he? And he's the only player City have had in the Guardiola era that's like a bigger personality than Guardiola and a bigger attraction, because the whole thing has been about, you know, it's just about the team, isn't it? And kind of Guardiola's probably the most interesting individual, you know, for all the quality players they've got. You know, now there's loads of Haaland shirts been sold and he's, you know, everyone's talking about him. Everybody that's not even a City fan like wants to watch him. You know, abroad, everybody's talking about Haaland. You know, it's this big, massive thing, and it's almost treated like, you know, before he came, certainly, and especially now that he actually is scoring loads of goals. But before he came, it was almost like, well, this guy is just going to be perfect. He's going to fit in perfectly. He's going to score a million goals and so you're going to win everything ever. And look, that still may be the case. But what he had to do was remember that he is just a 22-year-old lad who wants to improve, needs to improve, like is determined to improve. And as much as he's got these mad numbers and as much as he is a bit of a mad character. Like, he is a strange fella. And he is kind of ungainly on the pitch. You know that video the City put on their social media of like the Edison long kick late in the game? to the halfway line. He kind of slid to get it.
Yeah.
If he wasn't scoring loads of goals, people would be like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
But because, you know, because it's this whole kind of brand and cult of Haaland or whatever, everything is fine. But you do kind of consider him this kind of alien. But then when you speak to his teammates about him, it's like, he's just a normal person. Like, he's just like, they're not saying stop asking us, but it's like, I know this is how he looks and everything is mad, but he is just a normal guy. Like, he's just motivated to win. He's motivated to improve. You can tell by his interviews that he doesn't think too much about what should happen, what could happen. He just focuses on what he needs to do. He doesn't think about like, oh, am I going to score two or three or four today? It's just what he needs to do. His preparation's great. And he's like, and again, City couldn't be as good as they have been and as consistent as they have been over the last few years without all the players being like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he just kind of fits in. And he is like a normal guy. I suppose it sounds a bit like a Marvel thing, but he is like a normal guy with like...
with superpowers, yeah.
Powers, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, yeah, it is a bit like that. It is a bit like that.
Yeah. Clark Kent without the glasses. He took the physio on international duty with him, Paul, which is a kind of an odd development, but it does show the relationship that he's getting with the City staff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's not the first time that a City physio travels with a player to an international break or just to be close to him for some treatment. But yeah, I think something that City has been really really aware of is, and I think it's something that goes back to the day that when they signed Pep, one of the biggest concerns that Pep had at Bayern Munich was his medical staff. He had seasons with loads of injuries at Bayern. It's been well documented in Martí Perarnau's book that his relationship with Bayern's doctor wasn't probably the best one or the most fluid one. So when he came to Man City, Chiki and Fran Soriano and everyone involved in the club had like crystal clear that they needed to provide the proper medical staff and physiotherapist and a sports scientist to Pep just to make sure that he wouldn't find any kind of problem in that regard again. And I think that it has paid off, not just because of the injury record, but just with examples that you see with Haaland right now. They have a so involved team of like doctors and physios that they can get that. They can get physios to reach that relationship with players. I think that there might be also like a bit of an element of like a lucky charm for Haaland. I mean, he started the season working with Mario Pafundi. And why not continue with him and just being close to him if things has panned out just in the way that they've done. But yeah, I think it's something that also highlights like the work that City has been doing on the long term for the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, and just on the pitch, Sam, just before we move on to a little bit more of the football talk, the relationship that he's getting, especially with Foden and De Bruyne, looks like it's ever improving. I mean, you mentioned about early in the season, City were trying to play too quickly to him. Has that changed now, do you think?
Yeah, it suddenly dawned on me before the Southampton game on Saturday. I was like, oh, do you remember that? Because it just hasn't happened, has it? Like, I always go back to that Crystal Palace game as kind of an example of what Guardiola was saying about, you know, Messi could kind of score the goals by himself, but, you know, Haaland needs the help from the team. And that's fine. That's absolutely normal. You know, Haaland, I mean, we've seen him take people on and do dribbles, but he's not going to pick up the ball on halfway line on the right wing and dribble infield and put it in the top corner like Messi can. And that's fine. It's just a statement of fact. And that Crystal Palace game was a great example of that because they were rushing so much in that first half to try and get the ball to him. Walker was in that kind of inside position having to play like really progressive line-breaking passes, which he couldn't do on the day. And, you know, I'm dubious about whether he can do it generally. And then after half-time, they stopped doing that. And, you know, they started feeding him. They were more patient. They started feeding him properly. And he scored a hat-trick. And then I was like, oh, that playing to him too quickly, which I thought they did at Villa as well in that 1-1 draw. They just haven't done that at all, haven't they? Have they? Like, there's been no like aimless long ball from Rodri, Cancelo, Walker, like, whoever's been playing fullback
looking for that space in behind for him to run into.
Yeah, which there have been in some of the first games. That just stopped. It's not like, oh, after that Villa game, where let's say there were six. Oh, the next game there was two, and then there was one. It's just stopped. It's just stopped altogether. So it's just interesting that the kind of phases that the City team is going through already this season, like with Guardiola saying, well, he didn't say that. He kind of disputed that was so big a thing. But I think if you did look at those games, you would see that it was happening. And then we've seen recently, like after the derby, when obviously scored six goals, played really well, especially in the first half. And he was like, important players are doing the simple things wrong, just like giving the ball away in the build-up. And then when I asked him about it the other week, he was like, yeah, you just got to pass the players in the blue shirt, not the players in a red shirt, and we've not been doing that. But again, that maybe it was just one game, but he kind of suggested it was a general thing. But against Southampton, you know, they didn't really have those problems. And in fact, you know, Southampton were pressing quite high with four players, and City just kind of manoeuvred around it very well. So again, yeah, it'll be interesting as the games go on, especially Anfield on Sunday, how that does go. But again, that's one of those things where, you know, maybe that's just nipped in the bud, like, well, as it's barely just begun.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Well, let's have a listen to what Guardiola said, Sam, because as you said, you asked him about the what simple things City can improve. This is what he said.
The most difficult thing in football is do the easy things. And the easy things is we are not doing some departments not really well. So we are alone, the simple passes, and we lost it. And this is our principles. The most biggest and more important principles that we have is we have the ball, we have to pass the ball to the guys who wear the blue t-shirt. We cannot give it to the red t-shirt. And I'm not saying in the final third in a situation you have to dribble one or two, lose the ball. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking that though you are simply just pass the ball. And lately we are not doing good. And again, in important stages and important games always will be a problem. And it's easy to solve it because they are good enough to do the simple things easy.
That's what I was going to say. If they're the simple things that they're doing wrong, is it simple? Obviously, if it was a couple of games, Wolves and United, is it just as simple as you talk to them last few days, today, and it should be sorted out soon?
I'm pretty sure.
So that was Guardiola speaking about the improvements to the simple things. It's that red shirt, that pass into a blue shirt thing that kind of really stands out, because it's one of those things that you get taught as a young age. Or, you know, always find a player in your same colour shirt, and I find it mad that it's still at the top level they still talk about things like that. Paul, just on that 4-0 against Southampton, like with Crystal Palace, they did a very good job of dealing with a team that caused them problems last season. As Sam said about passing through the press, I thought they did a really good job of kind of working out on the field where the space would be. That first half, the first half especially, Southampton were really trying to pin City back. And it was almost like Bernardo dropped a little bit deeper and Rodri, you know, found that little bit of space to be able to offer that outlet. And then I got the impression that City hadn't really got through that Southampton defence until they scored a good number of times. But I got the impression that when they were going to get through, they were really going to get through.
Yeah, I think that probably like, and it's kind of a normal thing regarding like the number of games that they've played over the last week. Probably City weren't as brilliant as they were on the Manchester derby, that they were really good. But I think that you can see how mature the team is. I mean, they just know, I think that they really know how to read all the spaces where they have to position themselves. I think that Bernardo Silva has evolved to a player so clever tactically that he can play as a false nine, he can play as a winger, or he can play as Rodri, next to Rodri. And he just stacks just to the space or to the position that the team really needs at any certain point. And when that happens, when all the players, not just Bernardo, but Kevin, but like everyone, knows which spaces you have to fulfill and which spaces you have to attack, I mean, it's so difficult for any team in the world just to stop them. And I think that this was the case against Southampton. Rather than a brilliant, powerful display, it was like a mature team that know how to do things, basically. And they just know how to play under Pep Guardiola, and they just do it by heart at this point.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments in, especially in the first half, Sam, because Cancelo was on my side of the pitch in the first half, where they passed it into Cancelo, and Southampton kind of got they tried to get three bodies around him to cut off any forward pass and show him just one pass, which was either back to Edison or back to Nathan Ake, and the number of times where City played it to him, knowing that was going to happen, in order for him to accept the pressure and then knock it back and kind of switch it to the side really quickly. It's not a new concept, but it's almost like you take that performance that they put in against Southampton last season where they kept trying to find Rodri and, you know, they just couldn't, the build-up just couldn't work. Is this Guardiola doing something different, or is it the team finding a way on the pitch? Do you know what I mean? Where the team themselves have come up with the solution to what the pressure, what Southampton were doing.
Yeah, but I mean, I kind of find another angle of this, and people were talking about, oh, well, Haaland will be the difference because Southampton got two draws against City. Like Southampton are much worse now.
Yeah.
There's part of that as well. Southampton are just worse. And also, like, okay, they got two draws last season, and they were very difficult. And okay, if they played like that again with the same kind of, I don't know, quality in the team or vibe around the team or whatever, then it may have been difficult. But, you know, results change from one season to another, and to be honest, I wish I had another one, but I'm sure the season before, well, Leeds. City dropped points against Leeds both times in that pandemic season, and then they beat them 7-0 last year. Like, it just happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, things change.
But yeah, I mean, City, they always are finding ways, aren't they? They always are coming up with solutions, and, you know, the other thing, you know, one of those things that Haaland said in the interview, which a million of Guardiola's players have said, is, you know, he tells us what to do on the Friday and then on the Saturday it happens on the pitch and I'm amazed kind of thing. You know, that's just analysis and, you know, knowing what to look for. Because, like, me and you could watch five games of Southampton and go, all right, well, what the fuck? What are we doing?
What are we going to do? But
Guardiola and his analysts watch five games. They go, okay, right, well, we're doing this. And he said last week, Guardiola, he goes, it doesn't always work. But, you know, often it does. But, you know, they make loads of different changes in games that we don't really notice anyway. Copenhagen went to five at the back last week at half-time and they had to change how they were doing things. And, you know, that's kind of the benefit. So when you talk about, so I suppose it doesn't really matter. Or maybe it does. But when you look at Derby results and why they've been so one-sided, you know, obviously the one recently and the two last season in particular, and even before, why there's been such a gulf, and it hasn't always worked on the pitch. But Guardiola's been there for so long now. The players largely have been there for so long, or even the new ones, they kind of get it. They, you know, if the team defends in a different way to what they were expecting, Guardiola obviously spots it straight away, and his assistants do too. And the players are like clever enough to implement any changes they need to make. They might realize the changes themselves. If they're told them, they'll take it on board. They're able to do that. And obviously, like, in terms of derbies and whoever it is, other teams, they obviously don't have a manager like that. They don't have the quality like that. And also, they don't have the time together. So that's why City can find these solutions from one game to the next, or even from like one half to the next, or, you know, 10 minutes, from one 10-minute portion of the game to the next, because they've just got all these tools to do it.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit more about Manuel Akanji, because Guardiola was glowing about him after the game on Saturday. He was asked in the post-match press conference if he knew that Akanji could play at right back. This is what he said.
I thought there are the players that you have to explain 10 times the things, and there are players that have to train 10 times what you are thinking or what you want to do. In this guy, we need just one training session just to say thing, and he got it. The movement has to do that fullback in our high pressing didn't train in once, and he did it perfectly. With the ball, he's a magnificent player. Our build-up should be today with three in the back, and that's why in the position like normally play Kyle or John, we thought could do it. Have a little bit scary because we didn't prove it before. The movement had to go up the pitch to make pressing come back, defend the crosses in the far post. He didn't miss one, so he was absolutely perfect. And the proof again, intelligent person, intelligent people always pay off worthy, so they are really, really good. Manu is, it was a huge impact since we arrived. So again, so the club make an incredible signing with him, but real one. And we are very pleased, all of us.
I was going to ask you about Akanji, Pet, because obviously there's been so much attention on Haaland this summer, and Akanji's played a very important role, I guess, because of all the injuries you've had. Has he surprised you how quickly he settled
in? Yeah.
And why do you think other teams maybe didn't have a look at him? Because he wasn't a huge amount of money by modern standards, was
he? Listen, in terms of signed players or don't signed players, all of us will make a good things and the bad things. So you never know. It was a this opportunity when I realized that Aimé didn't know. Unfortunately, Aimé was playing 90 minutes last day. It was brilliant. And but Nathan and John, they have sometimes they are not consistent to play every 3 days. And I said, oh, we need for this season we need a striker and a central defender. And we were lucky to have him. So he's very pleased. That all highlights is from Erling. So he's perfect at home with the family. Study the mathematics and this kind of things, and yeah, I'm very pleased because now we discovered today when we need three in the back playing right. Wow, with the absence from Kyle for a long time and John, I don't know will be back, have this chance, you know, to play right back in that position that Kirk can go there. Is so important for us. We have another weapon in the set pieces, in the long balls. How aggressive he is with the ball, having Carol composer. All the package is perfect.
I was going to say, because a lot of players do tend to take a bit of time to settle here sometimes, yeah, because of the way you play.
But I want to say, right, when you are in Delhi, I thought I didn't know him, but you realize immediately with the guy, with Carlos, with set pieces, he said to me, it's just to tell it once, he knows it. The movement, defensively, offensively, he trained, pay attention, and he executed perfectly. And this is a gift for the manager. It's a gift. A part of it is an excellent, excellent person.
So that was Guardiola speaking after the game against Southampton. Sam, you also spoke to Akanji in the mix zone after the Southampton game. There were other reporters in this as well, but I've cut all their questions out. So it sounds like you're interviewing him, but there were other people there. This is what he said when asked if he was expected to settle in so quickly.
That's what my expectations are to myself. That's why I came here. And my goal is to play in every game. In the end, it's the coach's decision. I try to make it as hard as possible. But yeah, that's the goal I set for myself.
How did you find out about City's interest in the summer? Well, 2 months ago.
Erling texted me, and then was with my agent. They talk with the club and everything. But yeah, that's basically how it went.
What did Erling say?
He said that they just asked him about me. Obviously, I think they already made their plans, but they just wanted some more information and they asked Erling about me. I didn't know what he said. I don't know what he said. Maybe, I hope, just good words. I think that's why I came here as well.
Pep was saying after the derby last week that the team was doing a lot of basic stuff wrong. And normally, after any game, he's really full of praise and positive. But when he says stuff like that, is it different? I know you've not been here too long, but is training different after that? Does he work extra hard on the certain aspects that he talks to us about? And how was the week after the United game? Was he happy with you? Was he upset? How did it work?
Yeah, he was happy with us that we won the game, but he's demanding a lot. He wants us to get better and better every day, and that's why he tells us also, like, the mistakes that we did, and we need to improve in that we have a game maybe like today that we don't concede a goal and we don't do the mistakes that we did against United. And yeah, that's what I think, especially me as a coach, that's what I want. As a player, that's what I want from my coach, that he makes me better. And then we come in, we do the video sessions, we do stuff in training that we try to improve, and I think today worked really well.
I know I said it's gone well, and you said you kind of expect that, but people already, fans I've heard, are already comparing you to like Vincent Kompany. Like, what do you say about that? Is that a nice thing? Is that something you welcome?
Yeah, of course. I think Vincent Kompany at his times, he was one of the best best defender in the Premier League, I think, and maybe the best in the world. And when I'm getting compared to a player like this, it's a big honor. But in the end, I'm trying to do my own thing. I'm not trying to copy Vincent Kompany. If they see me like this, it's okay. I'm happy with it. But yeah, in the end, I'm on the country and I'm trying to do my thing.
Who were the centre backs that you kind of looked up to when you were a younger player?
Yeah, I think Vincent Kompany is one of it. I think Sergio Ramos, I'm still not sure how you spell his name, but he's like, over the time, he's been for so many years, yeah, maybe one of the best centre backs that has ever played. And I think these are the kind of players that I look up to.
So that was Manuel Akanji speaking in the Mix Zone. Nothing but positivity from both of them there, Sam.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to go down that route of, oh, everybody thought you were shit, but you've been really good. Like, that wasn't what I had in mind.
Yeah.
But I know that sometimes those questions can be taken that way. So I was just like, yeah, you know, I think you've been great. Because also he could turn around and say, actually, I want to improve on this, this, and this, and I've not even started yet. But I was like, I think you've been great. Maybe better than expected. What do you think? But he was just like, no, believe in myself. So it's kind of like I was saying earlier about Haaland and that mentality to always improve and always think you're, you know, always be in the right frame of mind and always back yourself. Like, Akanji's like that. And, you know, if you're talking about writing articles about players that people are going to read or editors want to publish, Haaland is the eye-grabbing one. And Akanji's probably down the other end of that scale, because he's just not that interested in being a centre-back that not many people have heard of. That's just how the world works. But they've all got that kind of attitude. And, yeah, he does think very, you know, positively, and it shouldn't be a surprise, but, yeah, they all do. And, yeah, I mean, again, it just makes sense, doesn't it? Because how difficult is it to come into this City team? And he's been really impressive so far. You know, I think he'll get better as well. And then, yeah, he was immediately used in one of those weird hybrid roles that is a right back, but also was just kind of a right-sided centre back in a back three, and
yeah,
got to take on those principles and know which positions to be in and when to do it. And, you know, he took all that on really quickly. And I mean, yeah, in terms of better than expected, I don't think anybody expected him to be this good, considering how Aki came in and he was like, okay, he's going to need time. And, you know, it took like 18 months for him to really get it. For then Akanji, who nobody knew City were going to sign anyway, until right at the end. You go, who's this guy? What's going on here? Oh, by the way, he's better than Vincent Kompany. Like, it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
It's been a wild, a bit of a ride, hasn't it?
Yeah. Just if City sells him tomorrow, how much money do you think that they will get?
Yeah, it's far more than
60 million, maybe.
Yeah, far more than the 15 million he's paid.
Yeah. At least 40, yeah.
At least 40.
I mean, I just want to pick up on a thread that kind of Sam left angling there, Paul, because Akanji might have played right back in the Southampton game, but it wasn't really right back, was it? He wasn't getting up and down the line like you would expect a right back to do, and he wasn't doing what Guardiola was asking Kyle Walker to do earlier in the season. He was very much kind of a right centre back.
Yeah, I think that it was practically like a back three, and Cancelo was a left winger, basically. But at some occasions, we could see how Akanji just didn't have the fear just to carry the ball up the pitch when it was needed to. So I think, yeah, but basically I think that he is this kind of guy that probably the money that City paid for him helped him in terms of not being so much like on the spotlight or in the radar or in the headlines. But yeah, he's just a guy that he just like looks like so clever and so made to play under Pep. That if you see Pep that happy right now with City, with the team, with the situation he is right now, I think it's because deals like Manuel Akanji, basically. Because City has been able basically to provide him just every kind of piece that he asked for. I think that if you ask any City fan at the start of the season, would you like City having five centre-backs? Not many of them would agree with that deal. But now I think that no one can complain about Manuel Akanji and about all the options that it gave to the team. and yeah, with the cost that it had, of course.
Yeah, Sam, is this just a Guardiola solution to a problem in many ways that, like, yeah, sure, City have got five centre-backs and we'll probably see them play in this back three sort of thing a bit more often given Kyle Walker's injury and given the number of senior fullbacks they've got. But it's just a different way of playing, isn't it? It's kind of like looking at what squad options he's got and going, right, okay, well, we'll do this.
Yeah. And the opposition as well. So I don't know if he'll do it against Copenhagen. I don't know if he'll do it against Liverpool. I can't imagine he'll do it in both. I feel like there was something like this recently. Oh, it was just a fullback coming into midfield, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At the start, obviously, like you say it like that, and it doesn't sound new. But at the start of the season, it definitely did feel like kind of old principles kind of repackaged into being something new. You know, the way that Walker was using the ball and the way that they were kind of such a tight line of three, it did feel like, okay, is this the way to go? But, you know, the players that were available, it was your position at the time, and then, you know, kind of moved away from that. Yeah, these things just kind of come and go. And, you know, Anfield at the weekend, I'm sure there'll be something else. But it does seem like a wise use of personnel, you know, with not many fullbacks. Well, now it's just Cancelo, obviously Gomez, but, you know, Gomez is kind of not trusted quite as much as Akanji, let's say. You know, obviously Akanji's been like, you go in and crack on. And Gomez has been like, okay, you come on now and kind of learn the ropes a bit more, which is fine. But if you've just got Cancelo who's ready to start as a fullback at Anfield, it does make sense, especially because you've got five centre-backs soon who will be fit. You are maybe four at the moment who will be hoping to play. If you can play three of them in one go and limit the demands on the new guy, Gomez, who you're kind of bedding in, it does make sense. But, you know, there will be games when it's like, actually, no, I do want Cancelo and I do want Gomez and we'll do it this way. And then there'll be other games when it's like, actually, yeah, this will work quite well.
Yeah. Sam, I was quite interested as well in hearing that the first time he heard that City were interested was from a text from Haaland.
Yeah. He can do no wrong, can he, Haaland? I just thought that was interesting. And I mean, I imagine between getting that text and actually finding out from your agent that it was on, I wonder what he was thinking. Like, because obviously that opportunity to join City so late in the window as well, you'd be thinking, like, that's obviously amazing. But at what point would you, like, start to think it was happening? Like, yeah. If your mate texts you and say, oh, yeah, like, my boss was asking about you the other day. You'd be like, I wonder what all that's about. And like in any walk of life. But then when that boss is, well, not necessarily Pep, but you know, maybe it was Pep, maybe it was Cheeky, whatever. And you think, hold on a minute, am I going to be going to Man City next week? Like that, I'd love to know what he was thinking. If only somebody was in a position to ask him that question at the weekend.
Yeah,
if only. He seems like one of those good lads who will do the mix zone, unless he's got sick of us doing it two weeks in a row and we've asked him about countdown and text messages. He might be he's sick of it now, but yeah. We might be hearing a lot from him during the season.
I was thinking, though, while I was listening to him speak, because I kind of get why the countdown and the text message questions come around. And that's because he can speak, and he speaks kind of, there's an honesty there. And like, you can see that it's not, sure, he'll have been media trained like every other player on the planet, but like there's a way in which he speaks that is within the frames of the media training, but also offers something that isn't just the plain old, you know, we played well today, we've got to keep working hard sort of thing. And like that identity, Paul, when you listen to him speak, he wasn't fazed by the comparisons to Vincent Kompany. I mean, I made them on the show the other week. And you listen to the way he talks, he's saying, I like that, but equally, I'm not trying to be that. I'm just trying to be myself. And you kind of get that with the way he speaks.
I think. I mean, he's like a non-honest. He's a bit, I don't know if he's naive, because I don't think naive is the right word probably here, but he looked like so innocent that he just speaks like the truth how it is. I don't think he's at the same level of Kompany in terms of, I think that Kompany had more a message like as a leader, or just when he spoke, you could feel that it was kind of the voice of the dressing room. But maybe eventually Akanji can get there. We still don't know that. But yeah, I mean, I can see why people compare him with Vincent Kompany inside the pitch. I think that probably not. With the ball at his foot, he's better than Kompany. But yeah, of course, there is a company that did that for several years. Kanji has been here just for 3 months, so still a long time to go. But yeah, I think he's that kind of personality that it never hurts in a dressing room. You always want to have him. These kind of guys will, I'm not going to say never, but it's hard they're going to become a bad influence in the dressing room. So yeah, great business for City.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Now, for the second part of today's show, we're joined by Giles Elliott. He's the author of the new book called Pep Talk. It's all about the witticisms, sayings, and insults from City boss Pep Guardiola. Hi, Giles.
Morning. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. In terms of kind of Guardiola in front of the microphone, you've spent a while collating some of the things that he said. What are your favourite things that that he kind of comes out with?
Well, it was an interesting one, really, because when I started out, I was thinking, you know, he's not going to be particularly angry about anything in press conferences. I thought he'd be more guarded. But as time has gone on, I think he's become a bit more honest. But what was fun was delving back into previous eras as well. So my favourite quote in the book is actually for when he was in Italy and when he said, why would I need performance-enhancing drugs to play against Piacenza? You know, there's these forgotten eras of Guardiola's life, both as a player and as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, you've often said that when Guardiola has something to say, he just says it.
Yeah, and it's not always as memorable as that, and it's not always stuff that would get into a book, but like a couple of times this season, for example, after games, you know, he said, oh, you know, we're waiting desperately for Mahrez to come back to the player he is. And then, you know, then whether it's as a journalist or a fan, that there's something he wants to get off his chest, and he has done. And then he kind of leaves those breadcrumbs there for you to join the dots on. But then obviously there'd be the more memorable ones, like, you know, after City had the CAS ruling go in their favour, and, you know, he basically used it to call out all, you know, those 10 clubs that had written to CAS and all of those things. And he kind of rounded on Arsenal. And there was a team that he kind of did a double take on as he reeled them all off. And yeah, those kind of things. If he has got something to say, he definitely will say it. And, you know, I'm sure Giles has definitely got a big list of those.
Yeah. I mean, the research took obviously a long time, and, you know, timing is everything with books. And it took actually a while to persuade publishers to take this one on. I'd previously done a book on Jurgen Klopp called The Little Red Book of Klopp. And the original idea was basically Chairman Mao's little red book full of silly sayings by Klopp. That coincided, luckily, with Liverpool winning the title, though the publishers didn't want to do another one after then. So I turned to another publisher and they said, yeah, Pep will work. And the timing, as far as I'm concerned, will be perfect if City win the Champions League, which is a section of the book which is still unfinished, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, Paul, is Guardiola different when he's in Spanish? Because you're the native Spanish speaker here. What's he like in another language?
Yeah, I think that in Spanish, of course, he can, like, put his message across quite easily. And in Spanish, he's always been that guy, as Sam was saying, like, when he wants to say something, he just does it. I also have the feeling that he's really aware of when he's, like, on a press conference. He's really aware that he's kind of playing a role there, kind of sending a message to the dressing room as well, at the same time being as honest as he can. And in Spanish, I think that he might look like, yeah, he can find like an escape route to anything, or he just can explain any kind of question in a words that are not going to be too bad for the team, but at the same time are going to be sharp enough to send the message that he wants to.
It looks to me, though, that he's enjoying it more as time goes on. And it's almost as though the game is now in playing by his rules rather than the journalist's rules. Would you agree with that?
You mean here in England? Because I'd say that
here in England, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of tired of the amount of like media interviews that he has to do because, of course, like Premier League and all the deals that the club and the league has closed. I think that's obvious. He's like more comfortable like in an English perspective than in a Spanish perspective. Just any time that Spanish clubs came over like the UK to play against City in the Champions League, it's been a messy press conference. So I think that he finds it more comfortable like in England. But at the same time, I'd say that I can feel that he's tired by the amount of things that he has to do. But I mean,
he knows he has to do it.
That's how the business is. Just said that right now.
Yeah, Giles, I'm interested in kind of. It's not always what he says, though, is it? It's always kind of the. It's sometimes the way he says it.
Yes, there's, as I said, a bit of a subtext to things. And what I found most interesting is the shorter quotes. So when he goes off on a rant or tries to explain something, you know, he can be slightly repetitive. But if you actually edit it down to the smaller things, and there's one quote in the section called Tactics where he says, "Ideas belong to everyone, and I've stolen as many as I could." And, you know, that's a very odd thing to say for someone who basically set himself up as, you know, well, not as a bit of a genius. He'd never call himself that. But I think there's an element of in his personality that he knows how good he is.
Yeah, the number of times where the trope is that Guardiola overthinks things all the time. You know, we've spent, you know, hours and hours on this podcast explaining some of the decisions that he's made. But you're right, isn't it? There's a modesty there, isn't there?
There is a modesty, I think. And he knows that he is not as big as football and the history of football. And he keeps going on about City saying, you know, they're not as big as a club as United and Liverpool and even Arsenal. But, there's a tongue in a cheek there, isn't there? And yeah. I found it interesting coming as a non-City fan, though I've always had a bit of a soft spot, especially for the way City came back from dropping down the leagues. I should explain, I'm a Wimbledon fan, so I know all about that. I've got to like him more and more as the process has gone on, which has been part of the enjoyment of putting the book together.
Yeah, Sam, when you sit down in a press conference and you're kind of ahead of the press conference and you're thinking, well, what are we going to chat to him about today? Like, there are types of question that he bites on, aren't there? There are things that he likes talking about and things that you know are just not going to get a good reaction.
Yeah, there are. I couldn't say I could really put my finger on it now. I mean, yesterday in the press conference before the Copenhagen game, didn't go especially well. I asked him about, because there was nothing particularly that jumped out. So on games like this, where it's obviously not a massive game, and like, even if City don't win, there's plenty of other chances to sort it because they're in such a good position and they're so much better than the opposition as well. It was after the first Champions League game when he said, oh, Foden had been good and he hadn't necessarily been good. So I said, right, you said that. Since then, I think he's played pretty well. What do you think? And then he answered about the team. He was, oh, yeah, we've been good at this. We've been good at that. I think we have been better. And I was like, that is a very good answer. That's actually really interesting. But I did ask about Phil Foden. He didn't understand the first one. Didn't really understand the second one, which is unusual.
Yeah,
and then he just went. I went. It's about Foden. He was. I think he's been good. He was. Oh yeah, really good. And that was it. And I was like, right. So yesterday. So it doesn't matter how long you've been dealing with him and think you may have a, you know, a handle on how to get answers. It doesn't always work. And yesterday was a fine example of that.
Yeah, he's always got his guard up, hasn't he? To a certain extent, and I think accentuating the importance of family in his life. And, you know, I ended the book with a section just called Pep on Life. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, he uses that as his, you know, when he does switch off, which is probably never, the way that he can actually deflect any questions away from just so much press conference, as you say.
Paul, when it comes to kind of the way he's answering questions in press conferences, like, there's always the opportunity that he can choose to not understand the question because he's not dealing in his first language. But also is it hard sometimes to kind of get out of him what you need or what you want to hear from him?
Yeah, because I mean, I think that the example that Sam said is just like the perfect Yeah, just a perfect example of, because there's an element of man management there. Pep probably, and I don't know that, I'm just like speculating here, but probably he didn't want to hype up so much Phil Foden on some question yesterday, or he didn't want to highlight Phil Foden that much in the eyes of the dressing room, because who knows why. But my feeling is that when you ask him something, of course he understands the questions, like 99% of the times. But if he doesn't give you like the straight answer, it's basically because he feels that he can't, or that the best thing for the team is just not doing it.
Is he ever worried about being misquoted in that sense?
I think so. And I think that this is a concern or a danger that can happen in English rather than in Spanish. But I think that, yeah, just over the past years, like, it has happened to him like so many times that he's kind of like, he knows how it goes. He knows how the drill is.
But one thing that happens when you're transcribing from press conferences, and I'm a former journalist myself, you realize that there's about 7 different versions that come out anyway. And when you're putting together, you know, the definitive quote, especially as, you know, I hope there'll be a Spanish version of the book, trying to find what he actually said in the right context is virtually impossible. So you have to get a bit editorial and just sort of say, well, that looks quite good as a quote to me. So I'll hold my hands up and say that I've omitted the odd word here and then, where it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, Sam, I did it a bit earlier on, but I've quite nicely smoothed it out in the edit. He does this thing sometimes that I really like in press conferences, where you can tell how involved he is in it all, even if he doesn't like doing it. You can tell how involved he is by the times when he's gone, sorry, can you repeat the question, because I was still thinking about the previous answer that I've given.
Yeah, or sometimes, not too often, but the same kind of thing, the next journalist will start asking a question, and then he'll just think of something else that he was just talking about, and then he'll carry on straight away with that. But again, so the question I asked yesterday, he was then answering a question later on, and then he was talking about not the team as a whole. He was like, that's why with this question over here, he goes, sometimes I don't think about individuals, I'm thinking more about how the team is functioning or whatever. So it was kind of like, it was kind of reassuring in a way that he was like, for whatever reason, didn't seem to be in that mind frame to focus on that particular aspect, you know, on any given day. You know, some days it could be completely different. You know, some days he'll be worried about an injury. Some days he'll be thinking more about how, you know, when he said after the derby, the team aren't doing the simple things properly. You know, some days it'll be something else. But yeah, he can be so kind of in his head about certain things. And then, yeah, he'll just carry on and drop things in, or, you know, the best one though that I just thought of then is a crossover with the sarcastic comments. I remember a couple of years ago when he said, I think quite innocently, maybe it wasn't innocently, maybe he's that good at throwing shade now that he can really throw it under the radar. But when he said like Bayern Munich and Juventus are the best, most solid teams around Europe for the last few years because they win the league all the time and that's what they want. And obviously everybody in Madrid hated that because they were like, well, we've won the Champions League loads. And I thought, was it Scolari who was a Real Madrid manager? And he hated that. And he made some comment. Then Guardiola was asked about it afterwards. And then he was really sarcastic about that. I'm sure Paul will remember exactly what he said. But that was one of those where he finished his answer, gave it a couple of seconds of silence. And then he was like, I hope Scolari is happy with that, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But when he does it that way, that's one of my favourite Guardiola deliveries.
His silences are very good. It's like the one where he says with a sort of a mock look of surprise, just like, what, people don't like Liverpool? when he was just talking about them not being the most popular club in the country. That was brilliantly timed.
Yeah, he had a whole thing at the end of last season about how everyone was supporting Liverpool as well. And that was, I mean, let's get into
exactly,
that, Giles,
yeah.
Because there is a sort of side eye that comes with a lot of his comments. What really gets under his skin, do you think, from having looked back at what he says?
I think what really gets under his skin is that he's had it, the accusation that he's had it easy at clubs. So, you know, walking into Barcelona, you know, he couldn't do anything but win. Bayern Munich were always going to be champions every year he was there. And that City had the most money and therefore it was a walk in the park to win as many titles as he had. He always stresses the number of titles that he's won. You know, it's 21 in 7 years, whatever. You know, he keeps an ongoing tally. So I think it's the idea that it's been handed to him on a platter, Whereas in fact, the pressure at Bayern was obviously enormous to get something more than the Bundesliga. The pressure at City to get so many back-to-back titles, you know, is incredible. And the very nature of Barcelona being a cauldron and the circumstances he left it under, you know, which was extremely acrimonious, which again surprised me when I was doing the research for the book. So, you know, I think
that,
he's
that really he wants to like imagine how much it might have wound him up.
So I think it's, you know, he wants to beat his chest and say no, it has been me as well as my team and as well as my players. So he's an enormously proud man.
Yeah. Sam, when was Don't Talk Too Loud Barcelona? That was a
I can't put a time in that because I can't link that to like the days after the FFP decision.
I think it was before that, wasn't it?
I've got a feeling it was after, because he kind of foresaw all that financial shambles that they had coming. You know, it was probably like a few months before Messi ended up leaving, around then.
It was before Messi left.
There's a lot of that.
100% sure, because Messi left with Laporta, and the comments that he made were with Bartomeu in charge of Barcelona.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's an example of the almost kind of like stand up like timing he's got when he delivers these sorts of things. It's that
one. I know I mentioned it earlier, but that one when he reeled off those list of 10 clubs that had written, and he was going through them, and he did a double take on one. Was it like Wolves?
Yeah,
I can't remember what it was, but he was going through them, and he was like Arsenal, Liverpool, Everton, Wolverhampton. Like Chelsea, Villa, whatever. He's really good at that, and like the Spanish ones are good, but in terms of like when Paul said earlier, he's had some difficult press conferences when Spanish teams have come to like Manchester. The Atletico Madrid ones last season were murder, because he was accused of I can't even remember what he was accused of saying, the exact phrase, but that was it, because he said the word like prehistoric. Yeah. And then was it Koke had taken that and like put it on his Instagram?
Yeah,
and
he was
like proud to be prehistoric. And then like Simeone had mentioned it. And then like, all the journalists, and that was in the first game at home. And then the away game, everyone was like literally every Spanish reporter was like, well, you said this about being prehistoric, but they're actually pretty good, or but this. And he was like, well, I didn't say that. And then the next question was, well, he said they were prehistoric, but, and he was like, I didn't say this. And he just got really, really pissed off. And again, like, it was annoying me because, like, and again, like Giles was saying, in terms of the context was the day before he was talking about, like, so he was asked a tactical question, and he, like, referred to it like a recent book by Marty Perrinell. And he was like, he actually said the word prehistoric in that, like, you know, these things, he goes, what I'm doing isn't new. Again, kind of alluding to what Giles said earlier, what I'm doing isn't new. These things have been going on since like prehistoric times. And it was that word was kind of in his head. And then obviously after the game, when Atletico Madrid had defended with that kind of 5-5 formation, he was like, now, forever, in the prehistoric times, it's always going to be difficult to defend against that team, to attack against that setup. But yeah, he was kind of taken out of context. But again, you know, maybe he is that good at throwing shade that he does do it under the radar. But I would have honestly said, if I had to guess, there was no way he meant it that way. But then he just had to, like, every question was, oh, you said this. He's like, I didn't.
There's a nice quote about Simeone in the book, though, where, again, you know, he's said it so cleverly in two ways. He says about Simeone, he doesn't want to take the risk in the build-up, but after that, they have quality. So, you know, it's a nice little barb thrown in there, first of all. And then he ends it by saying, I'm not going to talk one second about these stupid debates. So, you know, he can add fuel to the fire when he needs to.
Yeah, he's always happy to, isn't he, Giles? Giles, thank you very much for joining us to talk about the book. When's it out for us?
It's out next week, 20th of October, I'd like to say all good bookshops, but certainly online, if nowhere else.
Lovely stuff. Giles Elliott, thank you very much.
Cheers, thank you.
And that's the end of this week's Why Always Us, so thanks as well to Sam Lee.
Thank you very much.
And Paul Byas.
Thank you very much, guys.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.